when you legalize cannabis for non-medical purpose and for recreational use, most of the time the objectives put forward are objectives that have to do with the public health approach, which means that those countries and states are aiming at reducing the consequences of going and seeking the cannabis industry. That's one. Two, trying to dry up the black market. Three, making it easy for people to access medicinal use if they want to. And four, reducing the cost of lawsuits and over incarceration. So these are one of the objectives. That could be understandable. Now, the problem is, first of all, what we're selling as cannabis, and I'm talking about selling in the communication, on the communication dimension, when you talk about cannabis, you do not always specify that the cannabis you're selling or the cannabis that you're providing is a low THC cannabis. And the way it's perceived by youngsters is that cannabis as a whole is something that doesn't bear any bad consequences or negative consequences. Well, it's quite the opposite. We know that for a fact, and we know that scientifically. And when you talk about 18 and above, when you allow someone 18, 19, 20 to buy cannabis, even though it's a low threshold, it's a low THC cannabis, still, it's cannabis. And no one knows exactly what are the long-term effects on the brain of cannabis, even with low THC. We don't know yet. That's one. Two, the immediate consequence of allowing cannabis to be sold for a non-medical purpose is the impact on the perception of the risk perception in youth. So everyone would understand that if you allow an 18 and above adult to get cannabis for non-medical use, that makes it trivial, you know, in the eye of a 15, 16-year-old who would think that cannabis is not dangerous. So they would buy cannabis in the street because they're not allowed to have the same access as those 18 and above.
In the 2022 report, it draws attention to the emergence of the highly potent synthetic non-fentanyl opiates, which are linked to an increasing number of overdose deaths. For this reason, the INCB is supporting member states in addressing this problem through the activities of its Global Rapid Interdiction of Dangerous Substances, GRITS, program. So can you tell us more about this program?
Yeah, it's a program that actually intends to detect and try to raise awareness and try to train people in dealing with opioid surges and opioids, trafficking. But let me emphasize and put more focus on this opioid problem, because this is, I think, my main message. My main message is that synthetic opioids are killing thousands and thousands of people worldwide, and especially in North America. This is a huge issue. And this issue at the ICB, this is really one of the main topic on our agenda, is how to raise awareness on one hand on the prescription of opioids, and the second hand on controlling trafficking of synthetic opioids in the streets, and how to train and really have professionals on how to manage pain, how to manage all the issues that are for anesthesia, for example, and all the indication, the therapeutic indications of synthetic opioids. But at the same time, how to make sure that the synthetic opioids that are in the street do not reach as many people as they do now. So this is also a global issue that needs to be tackled, and the ICB is doing everything it takes, actually, through a lot of other programs, not only GRITS, a lot of other programs, to make sure that one, we can detect and intervene when it comes to trafficking, two, try to train people to also detect cross-border trafficking. Three, to detect new products and new compounds that are actually out there.
You focused also on the discrimination against people who use drugs. So what are the main recommendations to end discrimination, or at least making it less?
Thank you so much. This is, to me, as a health professional, this is a crucial thing. The first thing is we need to work on the terminology. The terminology is something that needs to be totally reshaped and redesigned worldwide. We cannot still use wording like drug users or drug addicts or junkies or things like that. These are human beings, and these are people with a great deal of suffering on a daily basis, and they need their dignity to be respected and to be taken into consideration. They need also to have access to decent, one, prevention, two, treatment, and three, aftercare and recovery, and also relapse management, so and rehabilitation. So this is to me is one of the most important things, is to work on the terminology. The second thing is to really try to raise awareness worldwide, and especially in policymakers, to make sure those people have access to, as I said, evidence-based treatment, and not only any kind of treatment. Three is to put more money in prevention. Another thing is we don't put enough money in prevention. And that's the truth, I mean, worldwide. And we know the reasons. I mean, the time that it takes, I mean, prevention, the cost of assessment, the cost also of impact studies. I mean, all those kind of things that really hinder the investment in prevention, and that's, of course, that's absolutely absurd to me, because at the end of the day, prevention costs less money than treatment, and it costs less money than the fight against trafficking.
Professor Tawfiq, you also talked in your statement to the Economic and Social Council about the inequality in the availability of the internationally controlled substances for medical and scientific purposes. How can that gap be narrowed?
This is, again, a very good question. I mean, what we see worldwide is over-prescription and huge negative consequences in the general population in certain countries, and especially in developed countries and rich countries. And quite the opposite, what we're seeing is a very scarce availability and poor access to those very products in developed countries. And it's a pity, because on one hand, we're having very huge negative consequences, and the debt toll is really there to speak for itself. And on the other hand, we're seeing people with no access and suffering from pain, for example, or needing those treatments for a lot of other medical indications and not having them. Mm-hmm. My view, and that's the view of my other fellow members, is to promote, at the same time, a science-based, good prescription protocols and availability mechanisms in very developed countries, and at the same time, qualify human resources and train human resources and sensitize policymakers to make sure that in developing countries, those drugs become available.